Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble, over in Dalgety Bay as usual, and joined this evening by, as ever, by my co-host John Johnson over in the West. And we're delighted to have as our guest on the show this evening, Kenny Piper. Good evening, Kenny.
Good evening, guys. Nice to speak to you.
Now, many listeners to Radio EduTalk will be well aware of the much of the work that Kenny's been involved in, particularly that which he shares online over the past few years, and we'll know that he's a key player, shall we say, in the whole kind of pedigree movement. And no doubt we'll be hearing more about that later on in tonight's show. If you're listening live or indeed listening to the podcast, if you want to get in touch at any point with a comment or a question for Kenny, then you can email edutalker, edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag EduTalk. So without further ado, Kenny, could you just give us a kind of brief background to your career in education, sort of taking us right up to the present day?
Sure. I've been teaching English now for, 14 years. Started blogging about 3 years ago. In fact, it'll be 1st of January. It'll have been 3 years, and things have kind of developed well from there. I started blogging really because I wanted to reflect on my practice, and reading lots of other good blogs kind of inspired me to do that. So, and the blogging really opened me up to loads of other things. I got involved in Twitter as well, and just that amazing learning network you meet through Twitter. That again introduced me to Fergal and Neil Winton and all these guys at Pedigoo, and got involved in Pedigoo as well. Really, from more or less the beginning, not quite the beginning, but that's maybe 2 and a bit years ago now. And things have just developed from there, and I found the reflective side of blogging to be just incredible, because the 12 years before that, I was just kind of plodding along, really. And the last 3 years have been pretty incredible, really.
And what about your day job, Kenny? What does that entail?
I'm an English teacher in East Kilbride, full timetable, all the the usual hardships of everyday teaching, mentoring, all sorts of stuff. So yeah, pretty much full on all the time, really. So yeah.
And I suppose just to start off with, it'd be really interesting to hear more about your blog. I mean, you've been saying it's been running for a while now. So how did you get into blogging about your practice? I mean, I know you've been involved with the Chartered Teacher Scheme, and for
Sure.
me that was how I get into podcasts and just kind of opening up the laptop and starting to share some of your kind of deepest sort of professional insights and thoughts. So was it similar? And I think also many people would say that your blog is very different from most blogs, certainly within Scottish education. So could maybe people who aren't that familiar with your blog, could you give us a flavour about what it's all about and how it started and what it does for you?
Sure. I think the blog itself has gone through about three different transformations in terms of what I want it to be. I mean, I'd been reading blogs before that for quite a while, never quite had the confidence to do it. I think you look at things online and you sort of feel in awe of the work that other people are doing. And but I, so I plucked up the courage to talk about the things I was doing in class, things I was quite proud of, and things that I thought were successful and people might like to read about. And the danger with that is, and I think the danger with my blog was at the beginning, I kind of enjoyed the success and enjoyed the compliment of it, and you kind of drift away from doing it for reflective reasons to doing it in order to enjoy the limelight. And I remember about 18 months ago, I was at the stage of maybe dropping it because I'd forgotten really what it was about. I was writing things to impress other people rather than writing things for myself, the reflective element to it. And I was, getting more concerned about how many people were reading the blog and what will I write that people will want to read, and it totally lost the focus. But more recently, I made the decision to just say, look, this is something that I want to talk about my mistakes, and I want to talk about the difficulties that we have on an everyday, every period, every minute basis. We're in these huge, big, complicated spaces called schools, because I wasn't really reading that. You know, I was reading brilliant things about brilliant things that people were doing, and I still love reading those. I absolutely adore getting great ideas from other people, but I see the charter teacher thing, and I see the reflection thing, and I see blogging as, you know, a way of engaging teachers as a profession, not just super teachers, not just people that want to achieve things. I'd like to see everybody getting involved, and I think if you can be as honest as you can be and talk about the things that are disastrous, then maybe that'll be a way of inviting people into that process, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, Kenny, but to me your blogging seems to be quite brave in the fact that you reveal quite a lot about yourself in this, and almost the, you know, struggle and the thought processes you're going through, and that, I would imagine, to do that must be quite daunting for somebody thinking to start up blogging. It's one thing to say reflect in your practice, but it's other things to say, well, this didn't work, or as some of your posts recently have said, I'm going to completely change what I'm doing. And do you think we've got a profession that could have more, how many more people could it take doing that?
I would like to think that everybody could do that. There's a real danger. I was reading today somewhere, I don't remember if it was a tweet or it was a blog, about the way we might transform Scottish education is by changing from fixed mindset to growth mindset, and that means teachers as well. There's a real structure, there's a real hierarchical structure of not wanting to fail, or not being seen to fail, or not confessing to fail. And that's not just teachers, that goes right from the top. And I'm going to say down because I mean down, because, you know, regardless of what people will tell me about parallel hierarchies or whatever, it is a top-down process, and the kids are at the end of that. And if teachers, if you know, local authorities are too terrified to be seen to fail, then head teachers will be too scared to be seen to fail, as will depute, as will classroom teachers, and of course kids will as well. So, yeah, I know what you mean, and I don't see it a lot, and I think it is quite open and honest of me, but I think I couldn't do it any other way. I just think I'd feel a bit of a fraud if I was saying, look at everybody, look at me, I've got a shiny lesson. And that's got limited use long term, I think.
Hey Kenny, what allows you or enables you to be like that? Is it down to your professional training? Is it down to you as a human being, or you know, were you inspired by something, you know, in recent years that made you take this kind of approach? And I'm also wondering about the environment that you teach in as well. Are there aspects of that which allow you to be open? You know, I would have thought that, I think back to some kind of networks, for example, that I've been part of within Scottish education, and people, I think, have tended to be to kind of shy away from going public with things, either at a political level or with themselves, as you say, that kind of admitting some degree of failure. So, you know, is there something within your school culture that allows you, permits you, or gives you confidence to be as open?
I'm not sure it's a direct result of school culture. I mean, I've never felt particularly constraint in saying what I feel over the years, which has not always done me good, as you could imagine. But I teach in a fairly large school, and I think, to be honest, I would imagine very, very few of those teachers know I have this outside life. And that's not because I'm hiding it from them, it's just because, culture-wise, you know, I think we forget that blogging and Twitter are a tiny percentage of the teaching community, and I think that's not a great thing. I would like it to be more, but it's by doing the blogs, giving me a voice that I maybe didn't have before, in order to articulate my thoughts. And when I do talk about failures, I'd like to think it was in the context of saying, I know I'll do it differently next time. It's not a case of stamping my feet and saying that was rubbish and complaining. It's about, I think sometimes you have to go back to square one really to move forward with things. And hopefully that's what my blog does, you know. It's if it's slightly different, it is because I'm not different from any other teacher. That's the thing. I think, you know, you read some blogs and you think, wow, these guys are just superheroes. And I have, you know, as you all know, we're all teachers and we're all generally really good on our day, and we have stinking days where we should never be allowed in a classroom again, and we have other days where, you know, we should be carried around the town square on the shoulders of our parents, because we have brilliant days and terrible days. But in general, we're all good, and it's that bit in the middle that is catered for. The brilliant bit is not a true reflection. Neither's the bad bit, but we just need to have a bit of both out there.
I kind of love that notion, because I always felt when I was in the class that sometimes I was, you know, if I was on my game. If you're on your game, you're doing things right and everything's going well and all the rest of it. But it's really hard to do that day in, day out, and you just aren't going to manage it sometimes. This is going off topic slightly, Kenny.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, I'm going off topic. Because you're an English teacher, do you think about, when you're writing, are you thinking about writing, like the craft of writing and things, when you're writing on a blog?
I do so more now. I mean, in the last year, I've started doing a little bit of creative writing. I think all English teachers are secretly failed writers, failed stand-up comics, failed serial killers, probably. But I think there's something in there that likes the craft of writing. And I think, you know, some of the nice comments I get about the blog are maybe not so much about the topic, but about the way that I write. And I think I take more compliment from that than, well done, I'm glad I read you were rubbish today. But, you know, I like this, you know, so I do take a little bit more time in the process of writing, I think, yeah.
Because I know some people, and you're seeing it more and more in the sort of wider blogosphere, as people talk, not talking about themselves as bloggers anymore, but talking about themselves as writers. Even people writing in tech blogs and things will talk about themselves as writers. But I get the feeling when I read your blog that you do care about things that some of us, when we're blogging, don't even notice. My own blog is, you know, a typo riddled pile.
But the nights I've spent up thinking of titles for my blogs, usually better than the blog itself. Yeah. But
you always need a good title. So, sort of following on from that, I noticed earlier today you were doing something on Twitter, which was, there's two or three tweets and you were saying, ignore it, I'm just...
Oh, yes.
Right. So you want to tell us a wee bit about that?
Well, just it was a little trial. Again, you know, I'm interested in Twitter, you know, obviously as a teaching tool, as a professional development tool. But also I'm thinking now, I've seen examples of Twitter fiction where people will tweet lines from a story and see how that takes off and see how that builds up, and it's just a different form and a different experiment. It really was an experiment today. I mean, I'm going to maybe try and play with it a little and see what happens with it, but I like the idea of the I suppose the suspense of wait, you know, if you're reading a story, you're waiting for the next line. I suppose it kind of goes back to the old Charles Dickens magazine thing, but just in a much smaller form. So you maybe follow a story over the course of a couple of days that someone's writing. So I was playing around with it today, and I said, I did say ignore this as a test, hoping that people would say, please, Kenny, write more. but and what happened was they took me for my word and they ignored it, which was a bit of a shame. But I'm going to play about with it. But I like that idea. I like that idea with kids in the English classroom as well. You know, I do a lot of personal reading responses, which will be book tweets. And instead of the dreaded book review, I'll have kids writing 140 character book reviews, which is a really sounds like it's nice and short and easy, but it's actually quite a tough task for the younger kids to condense it into 140 characters. But yeah, I'm interested in that form as well.
One of the interesting things I think about just once you start blogging or tweeting and things like that is a crossover between real life and work life and play life. I'm including your writing in the sort of the play life, and you tweet about, you know, people tweet about going to football or going for a walk or something. And I mean, that's quite a nice mix, I think. And I wonder if we're maybe beginning to see some sort of blurring of identities where people you would have had a professional relationship with through online media, you have more than that.
Well, I, you know, it's funny you should say that, because attend and teach mates, as we all do, all three of us do. It's funny when you go to these things, and you know, I've been to London and Newcastle for Pedigree events, and you find it's a strange. You find yourself in a room full of strange, you know, full of friends you've never met, and that sounds like a real cliche, but you know Twitter names, and you know people know things about you through Twitter, which is really nice. And Pedigree is great for that. And you know, I suppose if we lead into talking about Pedigree, what, you know, Fergal and Neil and Kirsty in the early days wanted to create a community that got together, that, you know, a voice that maybe wasn't there in all of our schools, that we could develop that. And I would certainly say Fergal, Neil and several others have become really close friends through that.
Just for benefit for listeners, then, can you kind of encapsulate what Pedigree's all about, or maybe how it's changed over its first couple of years?
Sure. Well, Pedigree is started off as an online community of teachers who really wanted to make sense of curriculum for excellence and the implementation of that, and have conversations that maybe weren't being had in our schools, as I said. Started off really as a blog, and that is really the focus of it at the moment. It's still a blog where anybody can sign up to it, and that was the thing. There are two or three, four admin for Pedigree in Scotland, maybe five, I'm not sure. Anyway, but that was really the only hierarchy that we would have, that we would do that admin side and organise things, but any teacher could sign up and blog about their practice, could come on and ask for help from anybody who's doing a particular subject or project or whatever. And it was just that sort of confusion of where we were going with Curriculum for Excellence, and we wanted to bring all that together and see if we could create some kind of community that could self-support, really. And over the 2 years, it's had its peaks and it's had its low points, and we're all busy people and we drift in and out of it. Fergal sort of is real the engine behind it still, I would say, but he keeps us all up to date and keeps us involved, and it's now moved down into England as well, so there's a Pedigree in England that's vibrant, you know, was absolutely the word that I would use. And in Scotland we have events sporadically, not as many as I would like, but you know, we're all busy people, and we just want to know that there's a place for people to, well, that sounds pathetic, but you know, there's somewhere that teachers can go on and just hear about what's happening.
And Pedigree Friday's just been quite an incredible it's an incredible weekly event, you know. It's just you think it's the quieter times of the year, and I think, well, you know, will it be kind of less for the sponsors this week? But no, I mean, it just seems to, without measuring it deliberately, it appears to be sustainable. It appears to be growing, I think, and the variety of tweets, the variety of aspects of practice, and one or two adverts, no doubt. But You know, it just seems to be such a treasure trove of data, I suppose, for your average teacher.
Do you know what? I've said this before, and I hesitate to say that was my idea, but that was my idea. And it, and it came, and people say, you know, is there some philosophical thinking behind developing this idea? Did you throw it around the table, and did you think about what you would call it? And the reality is, Fergal and I were tweeting each other on a Thursday night after a couple of glasses of wine, watching Question Time and shouting at the telly, and we thought there must be a better way to end the week. And we thought, why don't we throw this out? And to be honest, it absolutely, genuinely is one of the things I'm most proud of, because if you just hit that hashtag on a Friday night, it's just superb, some of the things that you see, and even the little tiny things and the wee things of people that have never done it before. And we've had Pedigree Fridays from America and Sweden and Australia and Belgium and France, and it's just unbelievable. And it's become part of the language, you know, of a Twitter week for teachers. And It's not a new thing. It just becomes part of what they do, and I think it's just fabulous. I don't know anything else that's similar out there. Mm-hmm.
No, it seems, I mean, there's a few hashtags that are used by various groups of teachers, but I think what seems to be special about Pedigree Friday and Pedigree in general is the positivity. Just looking at the home Pedigree homepage, and there's a quote at the top: "A place where risk is permitted, failure is seen as opportunity, and success is shared, not solitary experience." And that seems to encapsulate a lot of what you do, and it encapsulates certainly the vibe you get off the Pedigree Friday hashtag. Kenny, I wonder, one thing David and I have talked about with various folk over EduTalks is whether Twitter can be seen as CPD, or where it sits in that. Would you say that it's actual professional development to be doing stuff on Twitter?
Oh, I have no doubt. I think the reality of it is, though, you have to, it's not as easy as people think. And I know people say, oh, Twitter's the best CPD I've ever had. And I wouldn't really agree with that. It's led me to some of the best CPD I've ever had. So it's a context for CPD. And I don't think you could say to the colleague next door and say, go on Twitter this week and you'll see the best CPD you've ever had. But if you start to follow the right people, and you start to follow the right links, and you start to listen to people and try ideas out, it's a staff room that goes on forever. And that I've found that, oh, you know, then there are times where I don't want to be on it, because the negative slant sort of enters into Twitter as well. But if you know what you're looking for, and you start developing a PLN, personal learning network, with people are like-minded all over the place, then there's very little that you can't find, and there's very little that you can't find an answer to, I think. So I think it's absolutely essential for teachers to be on it, and I drive myself hoarse telling people that.
Sorry. Just a picture of you there in your staff room at school, trying to persuade people on Twitter.
Because
a lot of teachers that I meet, even ones who are on Twitter, are on it because they tweet about football or their social life or something like that. Like, they haven't developed it into something professional.
It can be what you want it to be, I suppose. If you want to, I mean, I tweet about the football sometimes as well. I tweet about watching rubbish TV sometimes, but that is in a context of 90% of the stuff that I do is on education of some sort. I would like to think, and I know someone will probably tweet me now saying, "Oh no, you tweeted a picture of a cat in a bath." and I probably did at some point, but that's a small percentage of what I do. But thinking in the past again, David, you'd asked about CPD and charter teacher, and I did about half of the charter teacher modules and stopped for financial reasons and all sorts of reasons, and I'm now back doing masters now. And I think if I'd had Twitter when I was doing charter teacher, I think 2008 was the last time I did anything in Chartered Teacher. I think it would have been a completely different experience. And it was a positive experience, but I think having a Twitter network would have made it much more beneficial.
So is Twitter then sort of giving you a staff room of people you'd like to talk to? Or
okay.
I don't, you know, or people, yeah, it just, it gives you a staff room of like-minded people.
Yeah. Neil Winton calls Pettigrew a staff room without the cynics. And, yeah. He obviously hasn't spoken to me much because I can be quite cynical now and again. But it is, you can choose, you know, I think social media in general, I'm not, you know, I'm sure there are loads of teachers that use Facebook in a very positive way. I don't personally, and Twitter's just my social media of choice, if you like. But I think if you choose and be willing to be questioned, and one of the things I was going to say about the blogging as well, and Twitter's exactly the same, you know, from the fixed mindset point of view, don't take criticism personally, and be willing to be challenged. And a lot of the culture of schools is challenge becomes a personal thing, you know, and it can be quite intimidating. But on Twitter, I think be willing to be questioned, but also, you know, fight your corner and debate and have the discussion.
I think personally, when I started before Twitter, when I started using a blog, it was like finding other teachers who were interested in the same thing as I was. There wasn't anybody in my particular school who was keen in educational technology in the same way as I was. And sometimes you thought, oh, I'm just wasting my time here. But once you find a community to join in, That's quite a powerful thing.
Sure, but then were you blogging in order to communicate, or were you blog? You know, my blog is really about myself, and I genuinely mean that. And that when I write now is because I want to get that. See, that we thought I had in the car, or that we thought I had. I want to just flesh that out and just clarify it to myself. And then if you can share that with other people, then that, you know, might be something that people are interested in. And I suppose my blog is slightly different, is that it's not always specifically English teaching. It's about the life of a teacher and the life of a teacher that's, as we all are, overworked and stressed and but still loving it.
Is there ever any kind of conflict in your mind, or even in kind of written form, then online, when you look at the kind of public face or the kind of assumptions that people would have behind Pettigrew about it being kind of always positive, and the fact that you said, you know, sometimes yourself you can be quite cynical about what's going on. I mean, you know, these are difficult times, and you know, no doubt you're involved with the new qualifications as well. So, you know, if, for example, something around the new nationals, if there was a big issue that something that just had never been fixed, you know, at the point when the new qualifications have been launched, would you feel that I shouldn't really go public in my blog about this because it's not maybe looking for solutions, or maybe too critical about what I possibly don't have any control over?
I wouldn't if I didn't think that I was asking the question. You know, if I was asking for answers and saying, look, seriously, I think this is a problem, are there answers out there that someone can help me with? I wouldn't do it just as a moan fest. I think the stuff that I moan at are mostly down to my own inefficiencies, if you like. But I don't want it to be a blog that just complains, because I can get that anywhere else. And I don't want to be, I certainly wouldn't question colleagues on there. I certainly wouldn't, I'm trying to think of the political way of expressing this. I wouldn't do anything down, and I wouldn't criticise if I didn't think that I was looking for a solution, or I had an alternative, or because, see, the bottom line, no matter what we think, I think what we said at the beginning of Pettigrew, regardless of what you think of Curriculum for Excellence, it's here and it's our job to make it work. And I think National 4s and National 5s there's no teacher listening to this in Scotland that's not pulling their hair out over National 4 and National 5 at the moment. But, you know, in a year's time, we'll probably look back at that and not laugh. We'll probably still cry about it, but we'll be a bit more used to it. And, we'll, you know, it's the first year of a course. It's kind of ridiculous the way that it's turned, the way that it's being processed, if you like. But, you know, we're working our way through it. And I think that's the thing. Finding other people that are in the same position as you. And it's not just you. It's not just me. That should be the name of my blog.
I suppose leading on from that, then, Kenny, you know, you're talking about your use of Twitter and your involvement with Pedigree, and you've kind of alluded about, you know, further master studies. So I suppose with in terms of you as a teacher and also in terms of you as an English specialist, you know, where else do you go for your CPD, or what other CPD opportunities are you indeed maybe involved in curating or networks that you're helping to build?
Gosh, let me think. What am I involved in? I struggle with that one. I get, you know, I can't remember the last time I was at school, you know, a day out of school for CPD. So, what, you know, if I get involved in anything, it's usually things that I find myself. So, you know, we keep ourselves busy with Pedigree events and we keep in the blogging and things like that, and an awful lot of reading and books that I get through blogging, and, you know, people recommend things to read on. I've got a book, I just get in a John Hattie book that I get in that someone recommended. So people will say, you need to read this. And some people will come directly to me and say, Kenny, after reading your blog, I think you should read this book, which is fantastic. And I'm never disappointed in that. So I keep, you know, I read all the time, and with the master stuff as well. I try and keep up to date with everything that's going on, but try and focus on things that I'm interested in much more so than I've ever done, really, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So
another thing I'm wondering if it may affect you, we talked earlier a wee bit about creative writing. You said you're starting to do some creative writing. Does that feed back into your teaching?
Oh God, yeah. I wrote a post last year, or was it earlier this year, about using the overhead projector, and I got roundly mocked by some people. But I still, you know, I've gone back to using an overhead projector for this simple reason, is I don't have any other technology in my classroom, but in the creative writing class that I do, you know, we're taught to think about writing in a completely different way, and I'm now using that kind of skill in the classroom, whereas before I would get kids to write an essay and we'll talk about the writing. Now, rather than teaching them or helping them to become better at writing, I'm helping them to be writers. Do you know what I mean? To think in the way that a writer does. And that's what, when I go to the class, that's what we're given. And since doing that, I've just seen the most incredible change in attitudes towards reading, and by using that overhead, where we critique each other's work, and we could, you know, get wee first year kids, 12-year-olds, seeing their work on the board, and all the whole class are all offering suggestions. It's the kind of thing we do in the class, and it's just absolutely transformed after 14 years of teaching. And it's something I thought I was pretty good at anyway, you know, but now I just think I've seen an incredible change in my attitude towards it, and it's been fantastic.
Do you put your own writing, or do you write in front of the children as a shared activity?
If I give them an exercise to do with certain guidelines, I will write my own on the overhead. And I will talk about why it's okay to change, and why it's okay to score out, and why what maybe this sentence should have, and why I've included that description, or so they can see the process as I go through it, rather than go away and write something and I'll stick red pen all over it. But it's been great.
So do you think that feeds back, again, I'm just trying to imagine this, this feeds back into, you know, when you bring a child's piece of writing up?
Yeah.
And I presume that the children can question or question your writing, and then maybe they feel a wee bit happier about being questioned. I don't know.
Absolutely, and my God, they do question my writing as well. Why have you got that full stop? No, it should have been a comma.
Yeah.
And they do, and it's great, and it becomes a hugely interactive exercise that we're all now working on. How do we make this sentence better? And there's nothing more pleasing than seeing a group of 13-year-olds arguing over whether that should be a full stop or a semicolon. And it's great. It's very funny. It's great fun. But and that's through doing the creative writing classes that's really brought that into it.
So you've gained a great deal professionally from using technology, from using Twitter, from blogging and things like that. And you just said, you know, the only technology you've got in your class is... the overhead projector. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts. I mean, this is going back a few years ago, but when I was starting getting my kids using blogs and publishing writing, I saw that as a very positive thing for the writing, to put it online in an open way and get some feedback, sometimes peered, but also assessment from just random people that picked it up. And I wonder if you have any thoughts of that sort of thing, if it was possible.
Oh yeah, but I've been a huge user of Glow in the last 5 years, and I'm not using it. Sorry, I didn't use it last year. I'm starting to dip my toe back in again now the changeover's happened. But I've had blogs and on Glow for a good 5 years. I've had senior classes with creative writing blogs where they peer assess and they comment on each other's. I've had a teacher's blog on Glow where kids can go in and find out my thoughts on today's lesson. I've had a wee book blog for the S1 kids where they write their little reviews of books and all sorts of things. Wikis on Glow. I've used Glow a lot. That's really, you know, the main focus. And I want it to be, because I know Glow is criticised a lot, but it's what we're given. And I don't have any access to anything else in school, and I won't be able to do that, so I'd like to get back into that. But I think it's, as an English teacher, I think access to blogs is just absolutely essential, and I'm missing it madly.
Okay, that sounds positive, because one of the things I spend most of my time thinking about is blogs, and you know, the affordances and the goodness they give to children. I wonder if one of the things I'm really interested in is the difference between a closed community like Glow and putting things out on the internet in the wild, so to speak.
The idea of Glow, if you think of the idea of Glow, it's 10 years old now, and having that closed community, but at the time was a great idea. Nowadays, it's much more problematic, because, you know, there's a whole wide world out there, and I think ultimately, there are obviously child protection issues and there's online safety issues there. I would like a world where I could have blogs that other people could read. I think ultimately to have comments from people around the world would be fantastic. So, but I really like the new Glow. I think it's exciting. It's getting there. It's still problematic, but I think we need to sort of try it out and see how it works. And then once we're in there, we've got our feet under the table, we can think about maybe how we might change that.
Okay, I want to say the promise of Glow at the moment is that what we've got is a sort of centre, and as I understand it anyway, we'll get other things added on in the same way that blogs were added on before. And you could make those blogs public. I think what we need now is ones that are a wee bit more up to date and will work with the devices children have got in their pockets and things like that.
But
I just remember kids who actually looked as if they grew a couple of inches because they got a comment from you know, an Australian or something like this.
Oh, absolutely.
Or from a poet. And that to me was really interesting. And it's also, I think, maybe the way, if we look at CPD and Curriculum for Excellence, is that they should sort of reflect each other. So we're maybe doing some CPD by writing a blog post and putting that out in the public, and that can be sort of mirrored by classroom, by people doing that with kids, because what you get out of writing a blog post is I presume a powerful learning experience.
The process of doing it's fantastic, and you know, just sort of clarifying thoughts and just getting that, you know, that thing that I wanted to say and seeing it on screen, you know, is that, and I think kids get that when they see their blog as well, and especially when they go back to it and it's still there, and they see their blog and they can play around with the way that it looks, and I think it's yours, and it is hugely powerful, and it's hugely confidence building as well, and it has been for me as well. I'm a completely different teacher than I was 3 years ago, as I think I said right at the beginning of this. So
yeah, I mean, very powerful. We've got a pile of tweets sitting out there, Kenny. I don't know if you've been watching them through show through. And there's Alison McCloy saying, listening to Kenny Piper and Edgy Talk, it's been a great week so far for the growth mindset.
Oh yeah,
do you? That's passing me by.
Well, I said, you know, as I said earlier on about you know, growth mindset being, you know, having the ability to know that you can keep getting better rather than, you know, the fixed. It's the old Carol Dweck thing about, do you know that the fixed growth mindsets where I'm not good at that, so I may as well stop doing it, or we can constantly keep getting better and constantly keep growing and constantly keep improving. And as I said before, I think one of the things that I read today about Scotland as a nation, regardless of politically what happens next year, if we can develop that sort of growth mindset amongst all of us, that we can make this better and just not assume that it's always going to be the same that it is, then I'm really excited about the future of curriculum excellence, or whatever you want to call it, and Scottish education.
Yep. And another tweet there, Ian Guest, who's he posts quite a lot of EduTalk vlogs, and he's been on the show.
Oh yeah,
from south of the border. Hi Ian. He's saying, he's talking about blogging, and he's saying, as I update our first stab at the 100WC, which I think is a 100 word challenge.
Yes.
You aware of that one?
I'm aware of it. It's not something I've looked up, but it's exciting.
And I think, sort of linking that in, I certainly don't consider myself literate in many ways, but I mean, I ended up getting sucked into writing haiku and stuff like that on Twitter, back and forward, because it's a nice playful space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And I think that's maybe one of the sort of affordances that the online things can come. And I'm just looking at your blog, and the way you've started illustrating it, and I think that's a reasonably recent thing.
How do you mean illustrating? Sorry,
the pictures you're adding, and that they're very playful.
Oh, right.
You know. And I think that's again one of the things that can help, maybe help us develop online, is the fact that we can play.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you find that little joke that I think David Tadell on about the titles of my blogs and the little photograph that might just be a wee tease or a wee metaphor for what you're trying to say. And I think that's, as you say, quite a playful thing, and developing your own space, which on Blogger WordPress you can kind of create your own themes and your own your own formats to your blog, and I think that's a, you know, it's a real great hands-on thing to do.
So yeah, you blog, and I'm just sort of rounding up to a current obsession of mine, at your own domain.
Yes, it does. I do now. That I didn't for a long time, but I was troubled by some of the ads that were coming up. So, and I'd always thought, well, I'll give this a little wee while before I become serious about it, before I decide I want to put a little bit of money on it. And you certainly don't have to if you want to do sort of basic blogging. But I've just, I bought a domain and I keep planning to do some other things with it and change it around, and I will do it at some point, but I don't have adverts for diet pills anymore, which is probably worth the money. Well, yeah. It might not be in about 5-10 years, but at the moment it's probably...
Yeah, but I mean, it's a fantastic domain for a start, just trying to get better, don't it? But do you not feel a sense of ownership then that's important and that might relate to some of the things you've been talking about, pupils giving them ownership of their own writing? Do you think there's a connection there?
Oh, I think there definitely is. I mean, I'm interested in the idea of certainly blogs within Glow being a primary school right through secondary school concept, and why not right into university, and why not into beyond, why not, and have a personal learning space, if you want to call it that, where, I know that a lot of schools are dipping their toe in e-portfolio, some further on than others, and it's something I'm really interested in, but until we sort out the hardware problem where kids have got access right across the board, a lot of kids will not have that access at home, and that becomes difficult. So until we sort that out, then it's always going to be a problem. But it's an idea that really excites, I think, for the future, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I've got this idea in my head, and I've blogged about it quite a lot, but giving pupils a space of their own which grows with them and it changes with them, and it can turn into anything they like, really, because as they get older, that you give them more and more ownership and more control of it. And what a great way to learn, because they're learning about all these other things. They're learning about internet safety and all the likes of it as they go along. And that's the way to maybe address that. I'm just veering off. We've been going for nearly an hour now, Kenny, and I realise...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I realise it's taken up quite a lot your evening.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, David's had to, he's had to pop out, and he just has left in the chat a big thank you to you. Is there anything else you want to cover or talk about, or...
Gosh,
this stage is yours.
I don't think so. I've been yapping away about all sorts of things. There'll probably be something in half an hour I wanted to say, but no, I've really enjoyed this. It's a bit like blogging. It's allowed me to think about things that in a way that I hadn't thought about before. So, when you explain to others, it becomes clear to yourself. So it's been good. Yeah, and I've enjoyed it.
As an advert... We're here every week, but David and myself both are fairly convinced. I'm very convinced that podcasting would be a useful adjunct to any classroom. We talked about children getting involved in blogging. I feel that podcasting and perhaps actually live things, because this is a different experience to recording a podcast that you write and then read out and edit, we just throw it in. But I think for children, it's a really interesting thing to get them to do. Again, that's me veering off, but it gives them a chance to cover an awful lot of the curriculum for excellence, and certainly in primary school, a lot of the language targets, because they're talking and they're listening and they're writing and they're reading all the rest.
A lot of it, as an English teacher, obviously talk is quite a big part of what we do from a day-to-day basis, and the old traditional, as they call it, solo talk that kids have to do and find so terrifying. I think there are just better ways around that can be less intimidating and more helpful for kids. And I just think I absolutely agree with you. I think it's just absolutely essential. I've been now trying to deal with my marking loads by giving senior pupils podcasts as responses to writing rather than the traditional writing one. And I'm finding it just, they just love the, you know, that they can hear my voice talking through their work. Mm. And it'll, they take ownership of that as well, rather than just correcting the things I've asked them to correct. They can hear me talking through paragraph by paragraph the areas they need to improve upon. And I just think there's such great scope for podcasting in the classroom. I totally agree with you.
On the marking one, I thought I've had recently, because I've been talking to people about various iPad apps that they can mark work on, is that you can talk an awful lot quicker than you can write something down. It becomes actually a useful tool. It's not one, I think, that there is things children will like about it, but there's also the fact that you can get through quite a lot more than you can by writing.
Absolutely. And you can also articulate your thoughts much better when you speak, you know, and you've got a fresh thought in your head about this particular sentence. I can get it down there and just record it on the iPhone. Doesn't have to be, it can be on anything, but I record it on the iPhone, just a start stop, and I can capture that thought that's in my head at that point, which will no doubt be disappear by the time I pick my pen up.
And I don't know if you saw Robert Jones, who's a maths teacher in East Lothian, a while ago. He was blogging about, and he used his phone to actually video himself marking his pupils' work, because he talked through it and basically just showed them. He would be writing in their work, he'd be videoing that with his phone, so he wasn't looking for, you know, high quality Robert polished pieces of video work, but it's just a communication method.
And so how did he get that to...
I can't remember.
Class blog, perhaps?
A blog, or... Well, I think he sent it to the individual pupils. I don't know if he would just have emailed it to them.
Okay.
You know, so that they would then have watched the video in their email. And presumably, you know, mobile phones, you usually can make quite a small video. And there wouldn't be an awful lot happening. It wouldn't be as if there would be, you know, millions of special effects and pixels flying about the screen, so I presume they'd be quite low quality, small videos. But again,
I'm writing that idea down, because I think it's fantastic. That's a great idea, I never thought of that.
And again, this is another, just because one of the other things David and I did a while ago is we went to the e-assessment conference for the last couple of years to broadcast, and there was a guy there. Oh, Russell Sarkoff, I can't actually remember his name, but what he did was bring kids' work up on screen. So he would just have a picture of their work on screen, and he'd have it in Word or something, so it was written work, and he was highlighting it and recording himself talking, making a screencast and sending it back to the children. So there's maybe some interesting things that we could do if, you, as you say, we can get an equity of hardware to pupils and across schools, which is maybe a tricky one.
Yeah, it's always about how we get kids to respond to the feedback that we give, you know. And I think if technology can make that more accessible, then we should use it. If it's just there because it's a fancy tool, we should dump it in the bin. But getting kids to respond to the feedback we give them is what teaching is all about. And, you know, if they can do it through podcast or video or whatever, then we shouldn't stick to traditional methods unless they really work for us.
Yeah. Anyway, Kenny, can you maybe, you're at justtryingtogetbetter.net and you're Kenny Piper on Twitter.
Yes.
And I had a wee bit of a problem earlier on because I was wondering how Piper was spelled and pronounced, but it's KENNYPIEPER.
That's a long story about that. I'll go into my next appearance.
Yeah, that would be good. I would really like to hear it now. Maybe it's more of a beer meet than an edutalk thing.
Yes, I think it may well be.
Ian at Sheffield, who's listening, is reminding me it's Russell Stannard at the assessment conference who talked a lot about videoing his responses to children's work. I think he's pretty Googleable. If I find something, I'll pop it in the show notes. We'll add, of course, your blog and Pedigoo and your Twitter to the archive podcast. It should be up in a day or two.
Fantastic.
And if you don't mind, I'll just mention one or two things coming up in the next week or two, folks. Next week, on the 27th of November, we've got Graham Pate, who works at the University of Glasgow. He teaches teachers. He blogs quite a lot about trying out different technological methods with his students in preparation for them going out into schools. Again, next week, on the 28th, on the Professional Learners for Teachers channel, we've got Dr. Karen McArdle on collaborative action research. A strange one to me, on the 4th of December, we've got David Larkin, who runs a site called Engineering in Motion, and he's talking about F1 in Formula 1, I think, in education, which I've no idea where it's going. I haven't really had time to check out the site yet. David just around here. It sounds as if it's interesting out there. We've got George Giltrest, who's a head teacher in the Professional Learning channel.
I know George.
You know George.
And
so on, folks. We've got quite a few shows booked up throughout December and January. As usual, if you're interested in getting in touch, you can email edutalker at hotmail.co.uk. You can tweet with hashtag edutalk or at edutalker, which is edutalkr. You can leave a response on the blog on the site onto Kenny's podcast. But probably everybody knows by now that Kenny is very available on Twitter. And I'm sure he'd be...
Did you rephrase that?
No, I suppose... I don't know how to
rephrase that. People can contact me very easily on Twitter.
But you're up for professional communication on Twitter. A well-kept face if you scroll through the timelines. Can I just say thanks very much, Kenny? Have a really enjoyable night. I hope I bump into you in the flesh again.
Indeed,
soon.
Yes. Indeed, it's been great fun. I really enjoyed it. I could sit here and talk all night.
Well, if you or anybody else is interested in doing things for yourself in EduTalk, we've got a channel open here for 24 hours. Mostly it churns out our archive of about 1,000 pieces of audio now that people have given us. So other than 8 o'clock on Wednesdays and usually about 8 on every second Thursday, we are certainly open to having people talking and taking over, running a wee programme for themselves or doing anything else they like. So if you and anybody else is interested, that offer is always there.
Keep that in mind.
If you've got more time to spare than most. But anyway, it was great to talk to you, Kenny.
And you.
Thanks very much.
And we'll see you soon.
Yep, hope so. And good night to everybody that's listening.